Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, everybody. We got a great one today, you know, for a change. Molly Jungfast and Mark Leibovich join me for our third and last in our Year in Review series. This time, we look at the year in politics and a lot of ground to cover there. More stuff happened since Molly and Mark and I recorded this. House Republicans voted unanimously to start an impeachment inquiry on President Biden. And of course, the inquiry is intended to inquire whether or not there's any reason to impeach President Biden. I guess there's no harm in inquiring, but normally, of course, the impeachment inquiry isn't adopted unless there's some evidence of something. Now, this, of course, was Republicans fulfilling the request of a former President Donald Trump, who's got a bone to pick because he was impeached twice. And the first one was virtually along party lines with two Democrats opposing. That, of course, was about Trump trying to shake down Volodymyr Zelensky to get the Ukrainian president to say that they were investigating Joe Biden for corruption. In the Senate, there was one Republican vote to convict on that one. That was Mitt Romney. On the second one, which was about a little thing called the January 6th insurrection, 10 Republicans, only 10, voted to impeach, and two of them are still in Congress, and 7 Republicans in the Senate voted to convict, including, of course, Romney again. Every Republican in the House, including the two guys, I guess, who voted to impeach Trump, voted for the impeachment inquiry on Biden. Meanwhile, Hunter Biden spoke out in his own defense at the Capitol on Wednesday in what I thought was a gutsy move, challenging Republicans to question him publicly, which they won't do. They want to be able to distort what he says. House Oversight Chair James Comer and House Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan, in a joint statement, said, "We will not provide special treatment because his last name is Biden." And of course, he is getting special treatment because his name is Biden. And they started contempt of Congress proceedings against him. Jordan, as you'll recall, also failed to respond to a subpoena to testify before a House committee, the January 6th committee, because Jordan had spoken to Trump several times on that day. All this stuff is at the behest that the MAGA House does, is at the behest of Donald Trump. And we have almost 11 months of this ahead of us. And you will hear Mark Leibovich and Molly Jungfast talk about the 11 and a half months behind us. So there's a great one today, you know, for a change. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey, Molly. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Al.
Hi, Al.
Hey, thanks for doing our third in a series of the year in review. This week, the year in review in politics. I couldn't think of two better people to do it with. Well.
Except for all those other better people who said no.
Ron Brownstein and Norm Ornstein, except with all this Israel stuff, I thought.
Ron is definitely smarter than we are.
Ron is very smart.
And he's a really a good writer. Yeah. Norm is good, too. But I think Ron is probably better
Norm
writer
is very
than we
smart.
Are. Yeah, Norm has better bona fides than we do.
Well, yeah, but we're the non-Steens. Like, those are, that's for the...
Right. That's right. We're both Jewish, but we don't have the same last name.
So, let me give you proper introductions.
Okay.
Molly Jong-Fast writes a column for Vanity Fair and has her own podcast, Fast Politics with Molly Jong-Fast. Mark Leibovich writes for the Atlantic Monthly, and his piece is The Final Word in their double issue, which is a warning to America on what a second Trump term would be. And it's pretty stunning. Mark, I will get to your piece. I think maybe at the end. I might end with it.
Okay.
But since we're loosely trying to do this chronologically, let's start with People's House. The House of Representatives. And starting on January 3rd, the vote for Speaker of the House went 15 ballots. And it ended up with McCarthy and putting a lot of extreme right wingers in critical key positions, and also gave any one member the right to call for a vote for a new speaker. Did they plan this?
The motion to vacate. I mean, I'm curious Mark's take, but my sense is that this kind of stupid cannot be planned.
No, I mean, although he was also, I mean, McCarthy was also desperate. I mean, he would right. not have, in a perfect world where he had like a cushion of like 20, 25 votes, as many majorities have been in the past, or more, he wouldn't have done that. But, you know, you had a situation where every holdout, everyone who was not ready to vote for him, like Matt Gaetz in this case, was saying, look, we want the motion to vacate. And he had to agree to it. Otherwise, he wasn't going to get through the first ballot and he wouldn't have been speaker to begin with.
But don't you think that there's an added layer of moronics here? Like, I mean, McCarthy, he's so desperate to be speaker, he can't even sort of game it out. I mean, don't you think his overzealousness also led to his destruction?
Yeah, I think so. I think because, everyone knew that he was absolutely desperate for this.
I've never seen anyone so desperate in my life.
No, it's true. I mean, he just wanted the gig for a few months so he could, like, take a picture with the speaker's office and get the gavel. Didn't the gavel always kind of look like a toy in his hand? You know, he's kind of holding it up over his head. Yeah, no, he just wanted souvenirs. And I remember he told me once that, I know the day I stop being speaker, no one's going to want to get their picture taken with me and no one's going to laugh at my jokes. And I think that's probably true.
When did he say that to you, though?
He said that. Oh, he said that in 2021. He wasn't speaker yet.
Okay.
Yeah, this was a few months after the insurrection.
Okay, because if he had said that after he had been elected speaker, that would have been pretty funny.
But he knew. But yeah. Right.
He's not a bright guy. Desperate guy.
Mm-hmm. I do think like that there is something incredible about the fact that literally everyone thought he was stupid. Like that is a sort of brilliant bit of political satire, or in this case, political life.
They didn't get rid of him when he voted to raise the debt ceiling.
Right.
And that made sense, right? Because raising the debt ceiling is like saving the world economy, right?
Yeah.
I think that was
his freebie. I think he was allowed to do sort of one of those things.
Yeah.
And so the next one was the one they got him on. What was it? That was just a CR.
The budget, or it was just the budget. It was a congressional. It was the
continuing resolution.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you needed Democratic votes to get a continuing resolution, which was just to keep the government open. Right.
Yeah.
So not quite as serious as the debt ceiling. We've shut down the government before.
It's perfect that the two things he actually did that were responsible in his brief speakership were ensured that he could not continue.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of accomplishments by this Congress and this House, are there? I don't know what they have passed that has become law.
So many unnamed post offices.
I don't even know if they've done that. I mean,
no, I know. That's why they have no names.
Unnamed. That's true. I just I'm in New Hampshire today and I just drove back to the post office and, you know, it was just a non.
It had no name.
I didn't even realize that.
It had waiting for a name.
Yeah. Maybe like Daniel Webster's great-great-grandson had it coming, but like they haven't actually done it yet. No, it's been a joke. There's been like, I can't imagine I think hasn't it been a historically unproductive.
I knew it was bad. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I knew it was bad when Punchbowl News had an episode of their podcast, which I listened to, where they were talking about how it was the do nothing Congress.
Oh, well, you have to name these things. So that's as good as anything.
Although hasn't there been a do nothing Congress in the past? I don't think it's original.
No.
Well, when you have a divided government, this can happen. But there have been other times where presidents have gotten things done with a divided Congress, I think.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, although there's also little things that we used to take for granted, like, you know, certifying elections,
right.
Like, you know, passing debt ceilings, just budgets and things like that, that used to be fairly, you know, routine. And of course, nothing is routine with these guys.
But is this idea that there's a certain amount of the certain section of the Republican Party that literally just wants to burn down the federal government? And for them, any kind
like
of 80% government.
80% of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like maybe 90 now.
Yeah. It's amazing how they all fell in place behind Mike Johnson after going through, what was that, about 3 weeks?
Yeah, three speakerless weeks. And I mean, with the Mike Johnson thing, what I thought was really interesting was at some point they just panicked and they were like, we're not going to take the Tom Emmers now. We're not going to take Scalise, who would be, you know, it's sort of the number two now, the number three now. We'll go to the number four. Nobody knows who the fuck this guy is.
But he isn't number four. Oh, and
he's number four. Yeah, in the leadership.
Fourth choice, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Scalise was number two in the
and
leadership.
And Emmer was three.
There wasn't someone in between Scalise and Emmer. Jordan.
Oh, Jordan. Yeah, they also rejected Jordan. That's right.
And
so
Jordan,
I guess he was
they
five.
Rejected him three times, right? I mean, they went.
Well. He's very rejectable.
Yeah. The fact that he was even considered was as frightening as Johnson.
Johnson's pretty frightening. I'm reading Liz Cheney's book now. You know what's amazing about Liz Cheney's book? Like, she keeps mentioning Johnson.
Yes.
You know, in like around the insurrection, around like, you know, but the most enthusiastic, sort of driven election deniers and the real organizer behind it. So she mentioned him repeatedly. And yet when she turned in the book, he hadn't I mean, he was still an unknown. He wasn't speaking.
Yeah.
She just didn't. She included him because he was so pivotal to those efforts.
Which is why Trump actually in the end picked him, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, whatever.
Because he wouldn't have been on Trump's radar unless he had written he wrote that amicus brief.
He wrote the amicus brief to the Supreme Court on the thing that was brought by the Texas Attorney General. Yeah. Okay, let's move on from him. So Comer is the head of the House Oversight Committee, and he's been investigating Biden. They have an impeachment inquiry on Biden.
Yep.
But they haven't said exactly what it's for. But this guy said that Biden had received payments from Chinese state-linked companies, or from Owasco, which is Hunter Biden's law firm. And he had received payments from state-linked companies and other foreign companies. And the emails claim that the payments are part of a pattern revealing Joe Biden knew about, participated, and benefited from his family's influence peddling. Who knows what those three payments were?
Probably a car or something. I mean, look, this is the vibes-based impeachment, right? They don't know what it is, but they know.
They have zero proof of this. I mean, what's kind of interesting.
These were, let me just, Molly was right. It was three payments of $1,380 that occurred in September, October, and November of 2018. Okay.
He was not president yet.
And he was not vice president.
Right.
But they were for a 2018 Ford Raptor truck that Joe Biden had purchased that Hunter Biden was using. According to an email verified by a Washington Post forensic analysis.
Mm-hmm. Vibes. It's a vibes-based impeachment.
Okay. Santos is gone. Let's not talk about that. Okay. We've determined they haven't passed any meaningful legislation. Nothing, right? Nothing.
They got rid of him. I mean, is that meaningful? I mean, you know.
There you go.
Sheila Jackson Lee is coming back to Congress. So now the majority is even slimmer for Mike Johnson.
What is it? Two? I mean, they have to replace McCarthy. So they lost Santos, McCarthy. So, yeah, I guess they're down to two. I mean, I assume, well, Santos is, I guess that district, what's the deal with the special?
That's there, right? We got Swazi running.
Yeah.
It's a D+3. Swazi was in Congress before. So we'll see. I mean, he could definitely win that district.
In which case the margin would be one.
Yeah. And also, McHenry's gone too, right?
McHenry, he's taking his box he's leaving.
Right. But did he quit immediately, or is he not running for re-election?
I think he's not running for re-election. So McCarthy was the one who was like, I'm really going to stick it to all of you and just leave at the end of the year.
So, yeah, he's gone too. I mean, I assume McCarthy's district is. Actually, I don't know. Bakersfield, California. I mean, I
don't know that district.
It's pretty red.
I mean, I think McHenry's seat is pretty red in North Carolina. I mean, I think he's been elected pretty easily.
Let's move to they're holding up in the Senate, right? The funding for Ukraine and the House, I think.
Yeah.
And that's about over immigration.
Right.
Great.
They don't like it.
Well, we need immigrants, don't we? I mean, I'm retirement age. I'm 72. So. And after this podcast,
that's it.
It's my last
Who will
one, guys.
Replace you though, Al.
Oh, okay.
He's irreplaceable. Who else is going to host the Al Franken podcast?
That's right. Good thinking, guys. Thank you.
We do need, I mean, I was talking to an economist about this today, and I was saying we need people because the labor market's so tight.
Well, the labor market's so tight because the economy's doing so well, which brings me to Bidenomics, which that's a winner. I mean, why don't Democrats ever get credit for, like, what they did economically?
You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this today. You know, Trump The one thing he does well is cheerlead, often often with, you know, he exaggerates the truth. You know, he uses all kinds of disingenuous ways of doing it. But
he does.
You know, everyone was like, oh, how dare you, you know, violate the norms. And, you know, you're not supposed to talk about the economy because it kind of jinxes it. You don't talk about the stock market. And I understand why. It was always seen as tacky, but, you know, tackiness was never an issue for him. But I think, you know, one of the benefits he got was that people actually did have a sense, whether it was true or not, that, you know, hey, this is a good economy because he keeps telling us it is. I mean, Biden is an old school guy, and he's also an old guy who wouldn't do that. I mean, cheerleading has never been part of the Democratic, certainly presidential messaging machine. And I think that might be something to reconsider if I'm a Democrat.
Is there an inherent bias in the press in terms of, boy, oh boy, if we report this is good, they're going to accuse us of having a liberal bias?
I don't know if it's because people are afraid of being accused of liberal bias, but I do think the reflexive need to sort of both sides these things, because, you know, Republicans are going to like be totally condemning no matter what the numbers are for whatever reason.
Well, here's some numbers. I'll give you some numbers.
Okay.
We had 5% economic growth on an annual basis in the third quarter. That's astounding. And unemployment is at 3.9%. Mm-hmm. And inflation is, on an annual basis, is down to 3.2%.
So I have a theory that part of the anxiety is that you don't, I mean, I don't care about this because I'm on the opinion side, but I do think that there is a certain anxiety about looking partisan, right?
But like, only it seems when there's a Democrat in the Oval Office do they feel shy about talking about remarkable.
I also think traditional media framing helps outliers, right? So someone like Trump, when he is taken in traditional media framing, which is the template for a lot of stuff, that actually really helps him, right? Because he can do crazy stuff and it doesn't necessarily fit into the narrative. And so you're able to normalize him really well that way.
Okay, well, that might explain a lot of things then.
It might. I also though think that like someone like Biden and even like other Democratic presidents like Bill Clinton, I mean, they were so eager to lead with empathy, right? That when you spend so much time sort of
leading with hate,
feeling your pain or just sort of feeling someone's, you know, grief or just sort of when you sort of lean into the pain and struggles that so many people in America are having, people, I think, in a weird way, kind of unconsciously, don't blame you for it, but they associate you with struggle. And, you know, Trump never bothered with that. He didn't want to deal with pain. He didn't want to deal with anyone else's, you know, ugliness. I don't know. That's just a theory that came to my head. So because it's a podcast, I just said it.
And we'll air it.
And you know what? We'll air it. Because, you know, there's a kernel of something in there.
Somewhere in there. So you mentioned his age, and that is an issue.
No, I don't think so.
You do.
Yeah, it's an issue.
It is.
He's getting older.
And there's no, yeah, there's no way around it. Because there's no challenge, right? There's no, Dean Phillips is not.
I have to say, it's my opinion that Dean Phillips sucks.
Well, I know Dean, and Dean's.
Oh, that's right. You're both from Minnesota.
Do you think he sucks, Al?
No.
Okay.
No, he's a.
He sucks.
He hasn't.
He's a smart guy.
He hasn't. He hasn't.
Only really taken off.
He hasn't taken off. Let's
put no. That
I mean, I applaud a primary challenge to Biden. I mean, I think that's a great idea. I think I wish someone who had more stature, more, you know, who had a better shot at winning had gotten in and gotten in earlier.
But much earlier if they were going to do it. And no one did it.
Yeah.
Does Hunter Biden, does that help neutralize all of Trump's problems?
Well, it certainly shouldn't. I mean, I think, you know, I think if the goal of Trump and his allies to sort of just like, okay, look, you know, they're crooked too, you know, I guess it can be effective because it's obviously a topic of a lot of conversation, certainly on Fox and a lot of investigation in the Congress. So
it seems that Trump's problems have neutralized his problems.
That's his thing, right?
Yeah, his thing. Think about it. I remember in late March, okay, so he gets indicted in Manhattan, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the cover-up for Stormy Daniels. And immediately, his numbers go up in the Republican side.
Right.
Right.
And every indictment, everything only helps him go up on the Republican side.
Mm-hmm.
But he stays constant pretty much nationally. And if it's amazing, if you look at the polling, how constant this has been. I mean, there are fluctuations, but they're small. This is going to be an incredibly tight race, right?
No doubt.
Okay, let's go over, since we're doing sort of a year in review, these indictments in which you might think will be the most serious when it goes to trial. It looks like the Supreme Court might take this appeal the case.
Expedited.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope they do. This is because we're thinking that the first case will be the January 6th case.
Right.
And that's set for what, March?
In March. The January 6th case is, I think, the most damning and most important and also the most, you know, the one that we all lived. I mean, we all saw it. I mean, the facts of the case are many of them are out there just because of the January 6th committee. And yeah, speed would be really nice here. I am encouraged that like the Supreme Court looks like they're going to consider this fast, because it would be really nice to have a federal trial. Like whatever the verdict is, it would be good to see this litigated. It'd be great to see Trump, you know, under oath. I mean, that is a story that I think would possibly move the needle in a campaign season.
Do you think he would testify?
I mean, he probably would say he wanted to and
then not do it.
That seems to be his MO.
Yes, it would be nice. And this will not be televised, and it will not be on radio either.
Yeah. Is that decided? I guess not. Haven't like Smith and I know Trump had like said he wants it to be televised.
He said
it's unlikely, though. It seems unlikely.
Okay, and Mar-a-Lago, the documents one is pretty slam dunk, but that won't happen before the
election. Yeah, because it's a Trumpy judge. Yeah, of all of them, I think the document case feels, I think you're right, it's a slam dunk. I mean, they seem to have them dead to rights there. It feels kind of remote, I think, to a lot of people. I mean, whereas, again, January 6th and also the Georgia one.
The Georgia one is the same, and that can be televised.
Correct.
That doesn't start until, I think, late August.
Right.
And particularly that it will take until November.
And it's pardon proof.
That is the great thing, yes.
It is a good thing, yeah.
Do you guys both, in your infinite political wisdom, think that it's definitely going to be Trump v. Biden?
Yes.
Sure, probably. But, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, actually, one of the reasons I'm sitting here in New Hampshire is, I want to see Nikki Haley. I don't think is completely out of the question. I think she's probably out of the question.
Well, that's something we didn't cover, which is that race.
yeah.
Otherwise known as the Republican primary.
Well, you know, Al, I am literally sitting in a hotel room in New Hampshire, so I'm uniquely positioned to talk about this.
Perfect. Our man in New Hampshire, Wally Blue.
Me and Jeff DeMond are going to the Wayfair for cocktails after.
Intrepid reporter Mark Leibovich joined us.
In a courtyard by Marriott in Manchester.
Better you than me, baby. I mean,
Nikki Haley has shown her in the debates, has shown herself to be very good, very smart, very.
Yes.
Now, here's my question, because I don't think she can get the nomination. But here's my question. At the end of this, if it was extended to her, take the beep nod.
I would say probably.
I'm sure.
Here's why. At every turn, she has done the opportunistic thing.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know
anyone
would want to be Donald Trump's vice president. I mean, the most submissive doormat.
That's why I think no.
Well, you would think, but, you know, but then.
But the opportunistic thing that she's done every time.
Every time.
Every time.
has probably helped her.
Probably yes. Yeah. The opportunism is not a bad quality in a politician, right?
Isn't it inevitable that's a horrible job that ends up very badly for you?
Have you met Mike Pence? They were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." That's not a good ending.
You don't think?
Yeah. When they're chanting about how they want to hang you.
How does it sound, "Hang Nikki Haley" sound?
Well, they were saying, "Hang out with Mike Pence." That's
Here's
what they were
why
saying.
Vivek Ramaswamy might be a little better. It's harder to say, "Hang Vivek Ramaswamy."
But I do think she takes it if she's offered it, but I don't think he offers it because I think he feels that she's too popular. I mean, part of the reason why he picked Mike Pence was A, he smartly liaised with evangelicals, which ended up Mike Pence was too good at convincing evangelicals. He made himself completely unnecessary, but redundant. But I just wonder if I think Trump wants a sort of Eric Trump-like character as Veep.
Could he pick his own son? Probably not, because they're both residents of Florida, right? So you got to be.
Oh, right.
I think he probably will take a complete sycophant. I don't think Carrie Lake, but someone maybe like Rick Scott or someone. I guess he's Florida too, so no Rick Scott. But
let's not do this.
Let's not play that.
Let's not do that.
Yeah, I know.
We're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back with Molly Jungfast and Mark Leibovich.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We're back with Mark Leibovich and Molly Jungfast. Here's one of my worries, because we're both, all three of us, saying this is a very going to be a very tight election. Trump won in 16 because of there were a couple third party runs.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have Jill Stein is running again. Robert Kennedy Jr. is going to be, I don't know if he gets on the ballot, where he gets on the ballot. Cornel West is running on what ticket?
Well, he was a Green Party, but not anymore.
Right.
I don't think does he not have a party?
Well, maybe he doesn't get on
the ballot.
I'm sure
he has something.
I guess, yeah.
And then there's always the no labels.
Right.
Threat. Yes.
Threat. Which is Joe Lieberman just hate the Democratic Party?
Yes.
I mean, I think Cornel West is pretty dangerous for Biden. In part because he's got real problems with the college left, the campus left, especially around the Middle East. Younger voters, black and brown voters. And, they weren't all that enthusiastic last time, but they didn't have a Cornel West to vote for last time. And now, there's actually a home for them. He's not going to win, but probably won't win a single electoral vote. But, in certain states, it could definitely move the needle.
So these college students don't study 2016.
No, they don't.
They weren't alive then.
They weren't alive then.
Math is hard. All right. I'm going to say something that's going to probably embarrass me later. But if I'm right, I'll look so good. Mm-hmm. call me a cockeyed optimist, but I do believe I do believe we have seen Democrats again and again perform better than polls, in some places significantly better. And I just, you know, that off your election, in my heart of hearts, I was sure the Democrats were going to lose the Virginia state legislature, and that Glenn Youngkin was making a convincing case of this sort of faux moderate Trumpist. And in fact, voters didn't like it. And I just think that between Roe and Trump in his revenge tour, where he says, let me be your retribution, because you know, we know that everyone took confidential documents to their private club in Palm Beach. I just don't know who relates to this.
Probably about 45% of the country, at least. I agree with you. I completely agree with you. I also think that it will become even more apparent as the I can't believe Biden's actually running, or I can't believe Trump's actually running. I mean, I think that's true. But I would say this, for as much as Democrats have pleasantly, surprisingly overperformed, like last year and in the off years, Republicans have overperformed on during elections that Trump has been on the ballot. You know, people forget that in 2020, Republicans actually did overperform. I mean, the presidential wasn't supposed to be as close. Democrats are supposed to win the Senate, and they were supposed to, you know, win a bunch of House seats. Neither of those things happened.
I asked someone about, you know, the low turnout in Virginia, for example, and they said, well, Trump wasn't on the ballot.
Right.
So I want to talk about Israel. You kind of spoke to that, which is college students and others. I mean, there are very sensible people who are taking issue with Biden on this and his support for Netanyahu, which is unquestionably he needed to do and should have done in the wake of October 7th. But now that they're looking at what's happening in Gaza, that there are people that will hold this against him. That will happen, right?
Seems to be. Yeah, it seems to be happening already. Although his polling isn't terrible in the Middle East. I mean, as much as you can believe that. I mean, it's also ticking up a little bit.
I mean, I just wonder, like, that situation has got so hot and it was so emotional for so many people that it was sort of hard to have, like, really sort of thoughtful conversations. I wonder how much now. Netanyahu is highly, at best, highly problematic, right? Even his own people want him out.
Oh, they want him out.
Yeah. And Hamas is nobody's idea of a good faith actor. So I do wonder, ultimately, I think, you know, it became a big sort of fight on the left and on the right. You know, there was a lot of division there, but you really don't have anyone you can sort of look to. I mean, I think ultimately what's the most important is that they're innocent people are dying, and that has to stop.
Well, that's why that's and that's it's hard to question that sentiment at all, because you
look, I would not question it.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Hey, I want to read from Mark's essay, which I think this ended the whole issue.
It was the walk-off essay.
It was the walk-off. Oh, that's what they call it then?
No, that's what I call it.
Oh, okay.
No, actually, yeah, I think they called it the last word or something like that.
So I think I'm reading the last word of the last word.
Okay.
This is Mark Leibovich in the Atlantic Monthly's December-January issue, which is everybody on, or almost everybody on the staff wrote a piece about what would happen if Trump won. And I would recommend this because it's absolutely chilling. This is the last word of the last word. You can dismiss Trump voters all you want, but give them this. They're every bit as American as any idealized vision of the place. If Trump wins in 2024, his detractors will have to reckon once again with the voters who got us here, to reconcile what it means to share a country with so many citizens who keep watching Trump spiral deeper into his moral void and still conclude, yes, that's our guy.
Yep, I wrote that.
You wrote that. That's good writing. That's what we call good writing.
Not very funny, though.
Not funny. NF, not funny, as Lorne Michaels would say. NF.
I mean, I think what I try to do here is, I mean, so we had this entire issue where a lot of my colleagues, you know, took a piece of what a Trump 2.0 might look like, whether from a corruption standpoint or a Justice Department standpoint, or, you know, military, education, so forth. And I wanted to step back and sort of say, look, I mean, we've been hearing for years, you know, the Clintons, the Obamas have been saying whenever something bad happens, like Charlottesville or something,
this is not
that's
American.
Not who we are.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, that's sort of been something between a scold and an affirmation from people on both sides to some degree. You know, I think after, you know, if Trump were to win, you know, as he's won before, and as he almost won in 2020, I mean, this is clearly who a lot of us are, right? You know, he didn't exactly go out in a blaze of glory a few years ago. I mean, there were 25,000 National Guard troops guarding the U.S. Capitol from the president's own supporters, which is not a great look for democracy. And, you know, he left behind an incredibly embattled country, and it's still here. It's still embattled. It's still extremely divided. And, you know, he's been indicted a bunch of times since then. He's had a bunch of loser endorsements. He hasn't moderated any of his positions, and yet here we are.
Yep.
Also not funny.
No, but also very sobering and very scary. Because if you read this issue, the corruption one is written by Frank Foer. There's so many of them that just are chilling. Anne Applebaum writes one where he'll withdraw from NATO and what that means. It's a scary prospect, and we're going to be facing it all the way until Election Day and maybe after.
Yeah. And I'm always interested in the people who are allowing it to happen. I'm not talking about the voters. I'm talking about the ostensibly the leaders of the Republican Party.
Well, you've written a number one New York Times bestseller.
Yeah.
On this. Thank you for your servitude.
Yes. Number one.
Number one.
No.
Wow.
But I mean, that's really depressing. I mean, I'm reading Liz Cheney's book now, which I would also recommend to people. I mean, it's a really, you know, it's sobering. I mean, it's not uplifting, but I'm learning a lot. And, yeah, I mean, it's amazing how rare such, you know, plain spoken courage has been in the Republican Party.
Well, rare, especially now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say how rare it is to be able to speak
it's very
to,
rare.
two friends about a subject that we'll see how it all ends. There you go. That's the last word.
So, Al, what do we do?
What do we do?
Yeah, well, we just got to just keep going, right?
Yeah, well, you're a journalist, so you keep journaling. You keep doing that thing. And Molly and I are advocates. We keep advocating.
And podcasting.
And podcasting.
An excellent podcast.
Yeah, and I also have a pack. Midwest Values Pack that gives money to Democrats and ground operation around the country. So that's what we do. But I encourage everyone who has been listening to this and got to the end of it to be active this cycle, because our democracy probably depends on it.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't going to end on a note like this, but what the heck? I mean, you know, despair is not an option. I mean, it's certainly tempting and it's certainly understandable, but it's not a time to give up and not a time to tune out.
There you go, everybody. You heard that was a real rouser.
Come on. Molly, I bet you can't do better than that.
Yeah.
I actually think that, again, if I'm right, this is going to look really good. And if I'm wrong, I think that people, normal people, not us, but people who like live in the real world, don't quite see who that Trump is going to be the nominee. And I think once he becomes the nominee, there's going to be a kind of like Biden was not. And again, I want to sort of temper this, but like Biden was not picked because he was a once in a lifetime gifted orator, right? He was picked because he was the sort of best shot at getting a white guy in there who was, you know, not an autocrat. And I think that when people see that Trump is the nominee, there's going to be, hopefully people will sort of come back to life there.
Again, a rouser.
Sorry.
He wasn't NF. He actually was a great orator, but that was about 40 years ago.
I actually don't. I think he was. He always said stuff he didn't mean to say.
True. He still kind of has that problem.
But I feel like now he's a little more measured. Like he's a little more. He's clearly like very careful now.
He learned a lesson from the last campaign where he couldn't. Mm-hmm. He couldn't go out because of COVID, mm-hmm. and so he was able to, be in his home. And actually talk to the American people via a prompter. And so he wasn't improvising because he loves crowds. And when he's crowds, that's when he improvises, or when there's anybody there, he improvises.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he just read what was on the prompter and it was working. And I think that he learned a lesson from that.
I actually think his speeches are pretty good. And I think that the fact that everyone always says that he's terrible at speaking makes, whenever you listen to him, you think, oh, this is pretty good.
Yeah, the problem is he's not a great reader of a teleprompter. Here's the thing, though. Like, he does give, I think he actually has some good speechwriters, but it's a little bit hard to, like, always kind of hold your breath through. You do sort of wonder if he's going to make his way through his sentences, unscathed.
But that is all because of the incredible media narrative that says that it's worked so well, this media narrative that he is old. And I remember watching those debates and thinking like, oh, my God, this guy, it doesn't match. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's actually better in debate than he is in a set speech. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, he's not. His oratory has gotten a little less good as he's gotten older, and he has gotten older. I mean, there aren't a lot of great speakers out there at 81.
Bernie's pretty good. He's 81.
Yeah,
he's 81. He just turned 81.
Bernie is pretty good. Yeah, Bernie's pretty good.
As a Jew myself, I never thought we'd ever. I still feel like the possibility of having a Jewish president is zero.
What are we talking about, Bernie?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Well, it's not going to be
not
Bernie.
Because he's Jewish, but because he's 80.
No, but
because he's Bernie.
But yeah. I also think that we're never going to have a Jewish president. We're never going to have a woman president.
We might. We have a Jewish first general, second gentleman.
The vice president's husband is Jewish. This is so lame.
Go. It'll have to be the highest ranking Jew in the military. I always said this. So Colin Powell. Everyone wanted Colin Powell to run. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I just drew from that. Oh, I see. This is before Barack Obama got elected, of course. I just said to myself, okay, that means the first Jew elected president will have to be the highest ranking, be a high ranking.
Yeah.
And it turned out, unfortunately, that the highest ranking Jew at the time in the military was the comptroller of the Coast Guard.
Is that true?
No.
Comptroller is a very hard job. It's a lot of math.
I was in the Coast Guard. You got to deal with all those waves.
That was a joke
boats?
I wrote.
That's a funny joke, Al.
Well, okay. That was a joke I wrote.
Funny joke.
When people wanted Colin Powell to run and he wouldn't run. So we might as well end on that. Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think, some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat. Yeah. Wondry and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondry app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondry Plus in the Wondry app or Wondry Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Once Upon a Beat.